This is AMDA On The Go, your gateway to expert discussions, journal article reviews, and innovation in post-acute and long-term care. AMDA On The Go is a presentation of the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. Support for this broadcast is provided by the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care. This podcast is eligible for ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits. Details will be provided at the end of this podcast. And now here's our host for AMDA On The Go, Dr. Wayne Saltzman.
Welcome to AMDA On The Go. This podcast will discuss ethical considerations in post-acute and long-term care with a focus on the stopping of eating and drinking by advance directive. Healthcare ethics is defined as a set of moral principles, beliefs, and values that guide us in making choices about medical care. And today, those choices spread across the healthcare continuum and the spectrum of life. At one end, we've had discussions around Roe v. Wade, but at the other, end-of-life considerations also constitute a number of other medical choices. Seven states and the District of Columbia have legalized physician-assisted death, such as Oregon's Death with Dignity statute. The use of cannabis or derived products for pain or other health needs and at the end of life has reached legalization in many states, despite being classified federally as a Schedule I medication, with ongoing questions around appropriate use. Despite the issues at hand, however, we continue to have conversations. Should we or shouldn't we do this or that, and what will be the consequences if we do or don't, beyond what may be seen as right or wrong? And at the end of the day, how do we provide patient-centered care when our patients present their goals or wishes for care that seem to go against what we have learned or have come to believe as healthcare providers? What do we do? How do we deal with the ethical conundrums of healthcare? Over the past few years, another conversation around a patient choice, especially at the end of life, has risen to the forefront, namely the concept of the voluntary stopping of eating and drinking, or VSED. In 2016, a New York Times story defined VSED as a way to speed up dying without asking permission. A 2014 systematic review by Ivanovic and others defined VSED as an action by a competent, capacitated person who voluntarily and deliberately chooses to stop eating and drinking with the primary intention of hastening death because of the persistence of unacceptable suffering. The same review commented that due to moral conflicts, VSED remained a marginal topic in the field of palliative medicine. And even more recently, the Ethics Committee with the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine has taken on the discussion about stopping eating and drinking by advance directive, or SED by AD. The SED by AD conversation is complex and focuses on definitions, autonomy, justice, ageism, and practicality. How do we make sense of the wish to stop eating and drinking? Is it only applicable in unique situations? What role does the team play? What voice does a practitioner have in trying to comply with patient-centered care? Well, as the vice chair of the Society's Ethics Committee, Dr. James Wright has been in the eye of this VSED and SED by AD hurricane, so to speak. And we're very fortunate to have Dr. Wright here with us now to help us begin to consider these issues further. Dr. James Wright is a geriatrician who focuses on skilled rehabilitation care as well as long-term care and memory centers. He has a certificate in ethics from Loyola University in Chicago. He also has a master's in theological studies from Union Presbyterian Seminary in Richmond, Virginia. Dr. Wright, welcome to AMDA On The Go.
Thank you, Wayne. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Wright, I wanted to start with the basics around ethics. You know, as a medical student, there may have been one or two lectures on the topic. In residency, fellowship, I'm hard-pressed to recall any specific discussions. And as a medical director, I've sat on ethics committees, usually called because someone doesn't want to do something to or for or by someone else. Mm-hmm. Of course, we all recall news stories sensationalizing a hospital or a team that wants to end or limit care, and we think, this is ethics. For you, though, what is the working discussion about ethics in healthcare? You know, do discussions or emphases change with regard to specific healthcare settings like the skilled nursing facility? And why do ethical considerations continue to be so important, especially as we consider how to integrate those considerations into the care that folks like our Joe AMDAs in the trenches provide every day?
Right. Good question. And I'll sympathize with you. I think as a med student, I was marginally interested in ethics. I found the discussions interesting, but maybe not as applicable as learning physiology and anatomy and immunology and all of that other stuff. So ethics for me was not really a primary focus of my practice, certainly in the first few years. I think for a lot of us AMDA folks, though, we've found that we are more involved with ethical discussions than we were before. And I know there's a lot of folks like me that kind of gravitated into nursing homes. But when I was in the family practice outpatient clinic, ethical discussions really did not happen that often. When I got into the nursing home and started focusing on folks, especially as they, you know, near end of life and have to make some major decisions, those are weighty ethical discussions that that oftentimes you need the background of a good ethical education or at least some familiarity with ethical principles to really be effective. I went ahead and got some additional education in ethics. But what helps me the most, and this is something I learned early in my ethical training at Loyola, what helps me the most is to remember that ethics was formed, especially in the United States, ethics was formed to protect our patients. And really, when you get down to it, it was to protect our patients from us. So most ethical discussions are focused on allowing a patient to exert their will, despite the fact that the surrounding medical system might have different ideas about what's in their best interest. So if you recall, and if you remember from your early ethical training, that the beginning of ethics in the United States, which was in the 70s, was a reaction to some pretty dubious quality ethical or medical experiments. The Tuskegee syphilis experiment, for example, the Karen Ann Quinlan case, where her family wished to withdraw her from life support and the hospital and actually the legal system would not allow her to do that. The ethical principles that we follow now were developed as a reaction to that. So remembering that, any ethical discussion is mainly in the interest of protecting patient autonomy and patient wishes is important. It's not to necessarily protect the physician. It's not necessarily there to protect the facility or the healthcare system. It's there to protect the patient. So that's the number one thing to remember when you're going into any kind of ethical discussion. It's about the patient.
You know, in a recent Journal of the American Geriatric Society article entitled simply Voluntary Stopping of Eating and Drinking, Dr. John Wax and others propose an organized system for evaluating individual appropriateness for VSAID. They discuss management of symptoms, anticipation of symptoms, mm-hmm. and of course the ethics and legalities around the topic. This really is not just as easy as saying I'm no longer going to eat and drink, is it? I mean, what is the difference mm-hmm. between voluntary stopping of eating and drinking and stopping of eating and drinking by advanced directive?
You right. know,
some say that mm-hmm. that VSAID has been a topic around for decades, but why is the topic of stopping of eating and drinking by advanced directive now coming to the forefront and being discussed more by you?
Right. Well, I think it is becoming, it's part of the VSAID movement as well. It is part of a patient's desire to have more control over the end of their life or the ending of their life. So VSAID, voluntary stopping eating and drinking, like you mentioned in the introduction, is a completely legal option that some patients take when suffering becomes unbearable. And it's a well-studied, systematic approach to ending life. Usually you stop eating first, and then after a couple of weeks or so, you start tapering off fluids, and death occurs after the cessation of fluids. Death occurs within a couple of weeks at the most. As I said, it's been studied well. It's a relatively painless way to end life, and it allows a patient to control their destiny. And the discussion of SED by advanced directives, or simply stopping eating and drinking by advanced directives, is of the same ilk. So stopping eating and drinking by advanced directives is a directive that's drawn up by a patient years in advance to direct their healthcare providers, their family, nurses, to stop feeding them, stop offering them fluids when a certain point is reached in their illness. That illness is almost universally dementia. Right. So it's drawn up in advance to speak for the patient, to give them control, to give them autonomy over their ending when they're no longer able to speak for themselves. And typically, an advanced directive for SED by AD includes phrases or clauses such as, when I stop recognizing my family members, when I am no longer able to speak clearly, when I'm no longer able to express enjoyment in eating or in activities, I want you to implement SED. So there's, you know, the similarities and the differences. And of course, the difference in SED, the major difference and why there's a larger ethical discussion around it, is that SED by AD, although it's voluntary when the initial advance directive is written, years later, when the person has developed advanced dementia and they no longer are able to speak for themselves or remember that they even drew up an advanced directive, it may not necessarily be voluntary. So our concern, the ethics committee of AMDA, our concern is that we want providers to stop and think before they implement SED by AD, because it may not be voluntary, and in fact, it may be against the wishes of our current patients to stop offering them food and fluids at a certain point of their lives, even in advanced dementia. So there's a critical difference in the removal of the word voluntary from SED by AD, and that's why it's such a so fraught with ethical as well as legal problems as well. We mentioned in the white paper that's coming out hopefully later this year that some states actually have a prohibition against SED by AD. It's a moot point as far as the physician or the facility is concerned, because you can't implement SED by AD in states, I believe New Hampshire and Oklahoma actually are two that come to mind that have an absolute prohibition against the practice anyway.
Our interview will continue after this brief message from the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. Among all charitable organizations, our foundation uniquely advances the interests of PALTC professionals by working to develop and expand our workforce and by focusing on innovation and quality improvement. Your contributions to the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine make a big difference. Please make a contribution today through our website or by calling the AMDA office.
We're talking with Dr. James Wright about the ethics around the stopping of eating and drinking. So as a segue to the last question and discussion, you know, as I'm trying to get my arms around this topic, Dr. Wright, what are the challenges specifically in the skilled nursing environment with SCT by advanced directive? You know, it seems to me, in my experience caring for elders with dementia, for example, they just stop eating and drinking. They don't announce it. They just stop. It's just like a natural progression of the disease almost. And our role as practitioners is to provide ongoing safety and comfort. In fact, we even tell families that it's okay. So, you know, so many questions, you know, how do we reconcile that food and water are considered life in so many cultures? And how do we get team consensus around around SED by advanced directive? Mm-hmm. And how do we prepare families for the consequences of halting hydration and, you know, trying to convince people that people aren't starving to death, where I guess in a sense they are, but they're really not. I mean, you know, and how do we, how do we, you know, for the healthcare agent trying to decide how to advocate for someone who no longer can, and that even our own colleagues were doing the right thing by patients when it comes to SED.
It is complex, and it's, you're right. It is okay for someone to stop eating and drinking. There is no one that, if given long enough, there is no one with dementia that doesn't eventually pass away from stopping eating and drinking. So it's perfectly fine. It's expected. It's, you know, quote unquote normal. We don't recommend feeding tubes because someone's losing weight from advanced dementia, because we know that there is no benefit. It does not improve quality of life, and it does not extend quantity of life. So we don't recommend any intervention when someone stops eating and drinking in advanced dementia. And it is something we all engage, a discussion we all engage in daily, talking to families and helping them to understand why someone with advanced dementia losing weight and stopping eventually all food and fluids is not starvation or dehydration. It is something that we help families to come to terms with by, usually, at least in my case, talking about neuroanatomy, talking about how the brain is affected by dementia. And I like to use the word destroyed by dementia. So the brain eventually, not only the parts that are responsible for memory and speech and ambulation and balance, those are not only destroyed as dementia progresses, but the parts of the brain that are responsible for hunger and thirst are eventually destroyed as well. And the thing I usually throw in there is that, thank goodness that that is destroyed before the part of the brain that's responsible for swallowing in most people. So most people with dementia, this complex activity of getting a bolus of food from the mouth safely into the esophagus is preserved until the very late stages. And the destruction of the hunger and thirst drive occurs before that. So I help them to understand that, you know, it could be worse. It could be that they're not able to swallow and they really want to. But what's happening here is that they no longer have interest in food or fluid. And that's why they're losing weight and slowly fading away. So you kind of help to present the anatomy, the science, the evidence of ineffectiveness of feeding tubes, and, you know, reassure them that this is a, unfortunately, normal and expected progression of the dementia. So it's something that, you know, I'm fully engaged in every day in preserving the patient's right to refuse food and fluids, and to get families on board with that. You know, occasionally, like everybody else, we fail, and some poor patient with advanced dementia ends up in the hospital and comes back to your facility with a peg tube. But most of the time, families are able to come to terms with that. And it seems to be getting easier as time goes on as well, I think. So I think that's important to make sure everyone understands, especially when they're talking about the complexities and our recommendations to question advanced directives that ask us to stop feeding someone. And really what an SED by AD is doing, it is preemptively stopping food and fluids before a patient or resident stops eating and drinking. And that's the only reason why it's an issue. If we simply allow dementia to progress and we don't worry about an advanced directive, of course everyone's going to stop eating and drinking, and no one would intervene in that. No professional would intervene in that. But it is the preemptive stopping eating and drinking or stopping offering food and fluids to somebody. That's really the ethical conundrum.
What about other members of the healthcare team, nursing staff, mm-hmm. therapists, directors of nursing, executive mm-hmm. directors, et cetera? Have you had experience or challenges with those members of the medical team or extended medical team?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's another good question. It is something we address in our white paper, the practical difficulties in implementing SED by AD in a facility. And as you well know, the long-term care arena is very punitive. And one of the things that regulatory boards look at is weight loss. So, you know, for a facility to stop offering food and fluids to a resident is something that's obviously very difficult for the staff. It's not only difficult for the administrator who is worried about, F tags and investigation from other healthcare boards. It is also difficult for the CNAs, the aides and the nurses who care for and care, really care for the residents in the facility. So, if you can imagine a resident with advanced directives that has stated, please stop offering me food and fluids when I no longer recognize my family, but this resident is still ambulatory walking around the facility, the snack cart comes by and they're reaching for a cracker or trying to get to the water. If you can imagine the aides and the nurses suddenly being in a position to say, no, you can't have that, and redirecting them away from any kind of food, you're suddenly turning them into someone who has previously cared for a patient by offering them nourishment to basically a police force that sequesters food and fluid away from a patient. So it is, practically speaking, it is very difficult, if not impossible, for a facility to implement SED by AD in some of these situations, especially when a patient shows food-seeking behavior. So yes, we have had discussions about the practical implications and the difficulty of implementing this, and we address that in our white paper. And in my view, it is simply impractical in many cases to implement this. And it is why, in the end, we recommend offering food and fluids to all of our residents as long as they seem interested in eating, as long as they're accepting food and fluids. We recommend offering food and fluids to all of our residents despite any advanced directives to the contrary.
Dr. Redd, as has been customary in the time that we've remaining, I want to be a mm-hmm. little provocative with you, but just more of an extension of the question you just answered. You know, mm-hmm. The Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine has advocated the need for advanced care planning for a couple of years now. We've had webinars, symposia, discussions, you know, on everything, including using advanced care planning codes. So, you know, for so long, having these discussions themselves was seen as death panel advocacy, as was palliative care. We seem to have evolved, but will these discussions around SED by advanced directive be setting us back in advanced care planning and heighten again the death panel genre, so to speak? Mm-hmm. Is this what you and others are trying to prevent? Because I'm thinking, you know, how do we reconcile patient-centered care and still mm-hmm. defend the value and need for quality of end-of-life care? Hospice care, for example, which is mm-hmm. not intended to hasten death. It often mm-hmm. increases survivorship and people thrive.
Live longer in palliative care. Yeah.
How do we reconcile these things and prevent the conversations about death panels coming up again?
Right. Well, here's what I saw that whole discussion about death panels coming from. People saw the discussion about trying to limit end-of-life care as a way to protect, quote unquote, the system, the healthcare system. So those discussions were framed in a discussion about how much money we were spending on healthcare. One way to cut down the cost is to cut down the exorbitant amount of money we spend on end-of-life care. And so people heard that, and the next thing they hear about is we're going to reward doctors for talking to patients about end-of-life care. And so you equate that discussion with your doctor to the healthcare system's interest in saving money. You know, Sarah Palin introduced the whole concept of death panels at that time, and it caught on because people really did feel that the healthcare system was more interested in saving money than it was helping them. So this goes back to my original discussion about ethics. Ethics is all about protecting a patient, protecting a resident. And so the reason why our discussions are going better now, I think the reason why is now patients are more convinced that there is a lot of suffering to be had at the end of life if you don't talk about it first. If you can convince them that your discussion is really a way to protect them against the unnecessary procedures and unnecessary suffering that you can potentially have at the end of life, you will avoid the whole death panel label, because you are their advocate. And if they can trust you as their advocate, they will feel free to speak with you about their wishes, and they will trust that your recommendations are in their best interest. And that's how I try to frame my ACP discussions is, you know, you start with, what are your wishes for the end of life? What have you told, or when we're talking about someone with dementia, what has this person ever told you about how they would like to spend their last days, and what are they afraid of? And then we talk about how we can protect them from that. So if they never wanted to end up as a vegetable, if they never wanted to end up on a ventilator, well, we should talk about how a do not resuscitate code status will protect them from anoxic brain injury and potentially ending up on the ventilator. So you frame it as a way to protect them, to always remind them that you're their advocate. And I see this discussion about SED by AD in the same light. We as geriatricians, as physicians that are devoted to caring for residents in long-term care, we need to be advocates for those residents, for our current patients. We don't necessarily totally disregard the previous wishes of these residents when they were able to express them. However, we can't totally disregard the current wishes of the residents that are under our care. And so we need to be first and foremost an advocate for residents in long-term care, residents that are dealing with all the trauma of dependency and a life lived in a medical system that simply does not offer enough resources to care for them as well as they could. They're dealing with the ageism and the dementism that's inherent in our society, and we need to be on their side and protect them against decisions that could be made based on the notion that a life lived in dependency or a life lived in dementia is not worth living. We know better. We live with these patients. We see them every day. We know that they're engaged in community, that there's even growth and enjoyment to be had in a life lived within a long-term care facility. And so what we can bring to this discussion is that these people live a life that is still of value, that is still of worth. And despite this preconceived notion of dementia reducing life's value, we can say, well, that may not be the case. Mrs. Johnson still does seem to enjoy listening to music and singing along. She still seems to enjoy eating. I know this is not the life she envisioned for herself, but at this point, she seems to want to continue living and feels that this life is still worth enough to continue in it. And so we should not end it prematurely. So that's what we're asking our colleagues to do, is to be an advocate for residents in long-term care facilities and question these directives that would tend to end life prematurely.
We have been fortunate to speak with and learn from Dr. James Wright regarding the ethics around the stopping of eating and drinking. Dr. Wright, thank you so much for spending your time with AMDA On The Go.
Oh, my pleasure, Wayne. Anytime.
References for this podcast can be found at paltc.podbean.com. Until next time, I'm Dr. Wayne Saltzman for this innovation podcast that we call AMDA On The Go.
Support for this broadcast is provided by the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care. If you are a physician and interested in obtaining ABPLM, pre-approved certified medical director credits for certification or recertification, please email cmd@paltc.org with your name and the podcast title. Thank you.